I am Plant on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. With 1 week and a day to the election, we look closely at the poll numbers we've been seeing and hearing about during the campaign. One of the most cited and often quoted polls is the CPAC Nanos tracking poll, which in past years, in the 2004 and 2006 elections, was the most accurate in capturing day-to-day shifts in public opinion. I am joined by Nick Nanos, one of Canada's leading pollsters. He is president and founder of Nanos Research, the official pollster for CPAC and for Quebecor's Sun and Osprey Media Groups. He is also a research associate professor in Canadian Studies at the State University of New York in Buffalo. NanosResearch.com is his website. Also check out NickOnTheNumbers.com for more. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Nick Nanos. Good morning, Mr. Nanos.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. Without jinxing yourself this time around, how accurate have your polls been in previous elections?
Well, in 2004, the Nanos tracking showed that the Liberals are going to form a minority government, and we were the only polling firm to show that. And in 2006, we were the only firm to show a conservative minority. And our results in 2006 were only 0.1 percentage point off from the outcome, which is a record. I don't think I'm going to be able to do that again, so just to manage expectations a little bit. But we've been pretty pleased with our track record on the national political scene.
Looking back at the previous two elections, at what point in the campaign did you sort of firm up your numbers? Was it up to the last day of the campaign, or was it throughout the campaign did you get a pattern that you knew what was going to happen at the election?
Well, for every campaign that I've been involved in, there's usually a point where everyone convinces themselves of a particular outcome that never actually occurs. And, you know, in 2004 at the beginning, it was that the Liberals were going to win a majority. And then in 2004 in the middle, it was that the Conservatives are going to win the election, and actually the Liberals won it. In 2006, same kind of thing happened. If you remember, there was a week where everyone was convinced that there was going to be a majority Conservative government. And I've learned through that process, in both of those elections, I kept pretty quiet, and I believe in staying quiet until the very end. I look for the numbers after the debate, and I also look at the numbers at the last weekend, because the reality is everything before that basically is more of a daily report card on how the leaders are doing, as opposed to kind of firm vote intentions. Because, you know, voting is a lot like Christmas shopping. A lot of people wait till the very end to make their final decision, and the last 72 hours are actually critical for any campaign.
You mentioned that you look at the numbers after the debate. Does that mean that the debate does matter and has an effect on people?
Yeah, I think it does. The debate mostly confirms existing opinion, but it does have an influence on voters. You know, like I've seen studies where a debate can have upwards of 17% impact. I've seen other studies where it's like 10%. But I look at it this way. If the debate sways 7% of voters in Canada, that's the difference between a majority and minority government. You might say that's nothing, but for me, you know, it's the incremental impact that counts. And I find about 3 or 4 days after the debate, usually a pattern starts to emerge that generally holds true to the end of the campaign. It's just a matter of whether it's amplified or not amplified on election day.
The latest poll that I have from your firm is that from Sunday the 5th. The Conservatives are at 34, the Liberals at 30, the NDP at 19, the Bloc at 10, and the Greens at 7. This has been the pattern for the last week or so, is that correct?
Actually, that's been the pattern since the leaders' debate.
Since the debate.
Yeah, prior to the debate, the Conservatives on any given day had a 10 to 14 point advantage over the Liberals. But in the days following the debate, that margin has narrowed to anywhere from 4 to 7 points.
Why do you think that is? Is that Harper just did not pull it off in the debate?
I think that's part of it. The polling shows that the movement specifically occurred in the province of Quebec. And I see the debates as an expectations game. And, you know, think of it this way. You know, for the last 18 months, the Conservatives have been merciless in their attack ads on Stéphane Dion. And Dion's personal numbers have been very, very weak. And expectations were so low for Stéphane Dion, just by having a pulse, breathing, walking through the debate and making some points, basically exceeded expectations. So people tuned into the debate waiting to see a car crash, and they saw Stéphane Dion do well in the French debate and also make it through the English debate without making a mistake. Conversely, because expectations for the Prime Minister are so high, because the perception that he's so strong, that I think people tuned into the debate and were waiting to see the Prime Minister control things. But I think what the Prime Minister did not have in his advantage was the format. This four-on-one format, it's hard for any incumbent to really come out a winner in this format. And I think for average Canadians, you know, they thought Stéphane Dion was very weak and the Prime Minister was very strong. They watched the debate and the Prime Minister did well, but he didn't look as comparatively strong as they thought, and Stéphane Dion didn't look as bad as they thought.
The NDP, how have they fared in your polls throughout this campaign thus far?
Actually, they've done quite well, and Jack Layton personally has done quite well. I would say he's been the most consistent performer in this campaign. We have a daily leadership index, and for most of the campaign, he's outperformed Stéphane Dion on a daily basis. And New Democrat support has been anywhere from 18 to 21%, depending on the day of the week. So, and on the best PM measure, when we ask Canadians who would make the best Prime Minister, for most of the campaign, he's actually been ahead of Stéphane Dion. Since the debate, it's been a tighter race between the two of them. But you know, up until the debate, you know, Layton was more likely to get the nod as the second choice on the best PM front.
On these questions that you ask regarding in the leadership index poll, you ask who Canadians think is the most trustworthy, the most competent, who has the best vision of the country. Is there a difference between the three? Do you find that someone does well in one of them but does not do well on the others, or are they the same people that you see? They place the same.
Well, the placement has generally been the same, but what I'll say, the impact has been different. So say, for example, the Prime Minister consistently does much better on competence compared to the other two measures. And he does well on all three measures, but he does much better on competence. But what we've seen in the last week or so is a slow deterioration for the Prime Minister where, you know, on the index score, you know, on any given day, he was over 100 points, which is quite strong, far and above ahead of the of Stéphane Dion or Jack Layton. But in the post-debate world, what we see is kind of an accumulation of a number of things. You know, he had to apologize for the Puffin ad. He had the Jerry Ritz issue to deal with, the plagiarism issue last week, and then the debate performance. And you add all those things up, and incrementally they put downward pressure on the Prime Minister's trust, vision, and competence numbers, and also on the number of Canadians who think he would be the best Prime Minister. We've seen a decline in the last 10 days. Nothing dramatic, but just a decline, almost like a point a day, from a high of 40 now to the low 30s.
And is there a correlation between the leadership index, how well one does there, and their vote choice at the end?
Yeah, actually, the way we look at it is the leadership index is an early warning indicator as for the best PM numbers, and the best PM numbers are an early warning indicator for the first rate for their ballot. So, say, for example, someone will say, you know what, Jack Layton had a good day yesterday. That doesn't mean that they're going to vote Conservative or think that he's going to make the best Prime Minister. If Jack Layton consistently does well, then people will say, you know what, he's not too bad. Maybe he'd be my choice as best Prime Minister. I'm not voting NDP, though, but he'd be my best choice. Then the next indicator, if he consistently is able to deliver, or any of the other leaders is to move that into the ballot box. So I see the daily index as an early warning of the trend. And that's why as soon as we saw the Prime Minister's numbers softening up, I knew that eventually his best PM numbers were going to slide, and then after that, the ballot box starts to slide.
When you do your poll, and you do it each night, is that correct?
Yes.
The question that you ask the respondents, is it, if a federal election were held today, you ask them their party choice, do you, or do you ask them about the candidates in their riding, and is there a difference?
Yeah, we ask them, we don't ask them about the candidates in the riding. The question is, if a federal election were held today, could you please rank your top two current local voting preferences? We don't include a list of parties. And, you know, the reality is that everyone votes locally. No one casts a vote directly for Stephen Harper or Stéphane Dion or Jack Layton or Elizabeth May. And when Elections Canada reports the results, it's, for all intents and purposes, an aggregation of all the local votes. So we've tried to capture that. And the important distinction between our methodology and other firms is that we ask an open-ended question, which means we don't list the parties in the question. And I always tell people, you know what, when I'm talking to my neighbor, I don't say, are you going to vote Liberal, Conservative, NDP, Bloc, or Green? I'm just going to ask, who are you going to vote for? They know what I mean, and they tell me who they're going to vote for. And that particular approach has worked well for us.
There's been a bit of debate at the early part of the campaign about pollsters, their numbers largely being incorrect because they seem to only call landlines, and young people do not have landlines. They're mainly on cell phones. Is that the same with the Nanos poll?
Well, we have a policy of including some cell phone-only respondents in the sample. It's a very small part of the sample. But, you know, like a lot of things in life, all those little incremental improvements or advantages add up. And, you know, we focus on the question. We have a very big emphasis on the quality and training of the people doing the calls. And the sample also includes some Canadians who are cell phone-only respondents. And it's not a big part of the sample because there aren't a lot of people who are in that group, but it's just another kind of incremental quality addition to what we do.
And considering other polls, are your numbers the same as what other pollsters have come up with this campaign thus far?
Well, generally they're the same. But you know what? On any given day there can be a fluctuation. And part of the problem is comparing what's being done because, for example, we do a three-day rolling sample. Another firm will do a four-day rolling sample. Another third firm will do a one-day sample. Someone would do it by telephone or online. So many times, you know, people want absolutely consistent numbers, but the thing is that there are different time periods that are being surveyed. You know, a good example was there was a pretty significant study put out last week that in Quebec that took 10 days to field. Well, you know, 10 days ago, it was a completely different campaign. The Conservatives were tied with the Bloc on day 1, 2, and 3. In days 7, 8, and 9, the Conservative campaign was spiraling in Quebec. And then, you know, that poll is released on the same day as my poll, which is a three-day track, and, you know, the numbers don't match. Well, the reason they don't match is because the two polls were done at different times and cover different periods within the campaign. So if you're a consumer of polls, the first thing you should do is look at the dates. Do the dates match up? And then the second thing you want to ask is, what are the questions that are on the survey? And, you know, 9 times out of 10, I would say 19 times out of 20, the polling numbers generally match up. But the differences can usually be explained in the time periods and so forth.
As a layman, I'm curious about the polls and that sort, but just if you could explain to me. So yours is a three-day rolling sample.
Yep.
So for example, the poll that'll come out today, Monday, will be results from Sunday, Saturday, and Friday. Is that
correct?
Right? And so you phone every day, and then I guess Tuesday you'll have Saturday, Sunday, Monday, right?
Yep.
Do you find first of all, are the people that you call every night, are they the same people or are they different?
Oh, they're different people.
And
So every day we'd have a completely different random sample. And we do random digit dialing, so we're not calling. We don't know who we're calling. It would be just a telephone exchange and a series of random digits. So that would include fax numbers and business numbers and so forth. And by having a random digit sample, it allows for kind of a level of purity, so to speak, in regards to really randomly reaching voters. And so it's a new group every single night throughout the whole campaign.
Has this do not call list thing, has that affected your work?
No, because the do not call, it actually should be good for the research industry because the do not call list applies fundamentally to telemarketers. and we'll still be bona fide researchers like myself. We'll still be able to do what we do. So I think in the long run, the experience in the U.S. has actually been positive because people are receiving fewer calls, and as a result, when they get a research call, they're more likely to participate. So I don't think it's going to have any kind of long-term negative impact.
And I'm calling you from Vancouver this morning, the Lower Mainland here. It seems to be a very competitive race. Is that the same that you find in your numbers?
Absolutely, yeah. I think a lot of it has to do with uptick in support for the New Democrats and also the Green Party being a factor. And it speaks to the importance of vote splitting. You know, for the Conservatives, the more vote splitting that exists, the better it is for them. Because what it does is divide the non-Harper universe to the mathematical advantage of the Conservatives. You know, what the Conservatives can't have is, what I'll say, a coalition of forces arraigned against them behind one particular party. And if you'll notice, if you remember in the leaders' debate, you know, Elizabeth May took a number of shots at the Prime Minister, was waving her finger in his face a number of times. If you notice, he didn't react. Because he actually needs Elizabeth May to do well to split that non-Harper vote. Same goes true with Jack Layton. The Prime Minister, pretty kid gloves approach to Jack Layton, because a strong Jack Layton is good for the Prime Minister in regards to vote splits. But you can see the Prime Minister firmly had his sights set on Gilles Duceppe in Quebec and Stéphane Dion in regards to the rest of Canada. So, you know, a good performance for Jack Layton and Elizabeth May indirectly helps the Conservatives split that anti-Conservative vote.
And finally, Nick, as the economic news of this day unfolds, it seems to be bad news. Have you seen throughout the campaign, as the sort of economic situation has gotten worse, that there is a link in terms of how Canadians feel about, I guess, back to the leadership trust thing, the leadership index situation?
Absolutely. Actually, at the beginning of the campaign, when the numbers were actually quite good for Stephen Harper when he was talking about, you know, the Liberals being a risky choice, and what I'll say, the first Wall Street meltdown validated that, and the Conservative numbers kind of pulled away from the Liberals. However, if things get, that's a sweet spot because, you know, things aren't really bad. They could be bad and volatile, but if the perception takes hold in the electorate that things will get really bad, I'm not sure how the, you know, Canada is different, our fundamentals are in place, will resonate with Canadian voters, because, you know, although our banking system is very different, if the American economy goes into a recession, it's going to have a direct impact on Canadian jobs, because Americans aren't going to be buying Canadian goods. So Stephen Harper has to be careful that the perception doesn't emerge that he's just going to let things happen the way they should because he's cutting taxes and the fundamentals are in place. And because, you know, our polling shows that Canadians want our leaders to do something. They don't know what they should be doing, but they'd like something to be done.
Nick, I appreciate you taking the time. You must be very busy this time of the campaign. It's been fascinating and informative, and we'll watch you tonight on CPAC.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
We'll check out NickOnNumbers.com throughout the rest of the campaign and beyond, and NanosResearch.com, NickOnTheNumbers.com. For the commentary, I'm Joseph Plata.